entwickeln, unsere Software. And talk about the multivariate investigation on the gamma ray blasts using QZ weight minus by 1/12.
All right, thank you all. Put up my collaborators here. This is a brief outline of my talk. I'm going to reintroduce Tanami again because you can never hear enough of it. And I'll give a brief introduction of why we're doing what we're doing. Describe the object we're looking at and the data we have on it, and then talk about some of the analysis that we've done and are currently in the process of doing. So Tanami is tracking active galactic nuclei with austral milliart signature interferometry. I have to thank Rupesh for coming up with the name, I think. So every time I give a talk, we have to go through all that. And essentially we're tracking, most of the core of the project is sort of the VLBI monitoring of these sources south of minus 30 degrees. Most of that's done with the Australian VLBA, well, the Australian version of the VLBA called the LBA, confusingly. And we observe it as an X band. That also includes a couple of extra telescopes, mostly O'Higgins and Seagull. Also HART. The image that we always put up whenever we talk about Tanami. The telescopes I'm particularly interested in are Sejuna and Hobart. Also the ATCA, which is hiding up here somewhere. And my source, which I'm very proud of, is just in here. And it's one of the brighter ones that we get to see, which is really cool. So there are several projects or programs that are supporting the Tanami VLBI observations, including those of the ATCA. The ATCA stands for Australia Telescope Compact Array. It's an array of six dishes located in Narrabri, New South Wales. These are 22-meter dishes on a 3-kilometer track, and there's a sixth antenna, which is a further 3 kilometers off the end of one track. So that observes at a cadence of roughly 6 weeks. We've had a little bit longer sometimes between observations, and observes all of the Tanami sources as well as a few other AVNs. And there's a poster just over there by Jamie Stevens describing that further. And here's just a picture which has not come out quite that well, sadly. But you can see this is a 360-degree view of the ATCA, and so we've got three antennas on this way, and the other two are that way, looking down the track. The other main telescope I use is Sejuna. Sejuna is a 30-meter ex-telecommunications dish, in South Australia. And essentially this observes between 2.4 and 22 gigahertz. Most of our monitoring is done at 6.7 gigahertz, which after this meeting we may try and go a little higher, because it appears to me that the higher you go in frequency, the more likely you are to see correlations. So we have a few observing modes. We observe about a sample of 40 AGN every 2 weeks, and we have daily monitoring of 12 sources. We also add sources every time there's an interesting flare, especially mostly triggered off them. This is Sejuna. It's really flat out there, so you can sort of see for miles. So I'm going to cover this really briefly because I think everybody knows this stuff. The mission mechanism is still very poorly understood. One of the possible explanations is the Compton upscattering. Again, you know, hadronic models still have a lot to offer as well. And the emission site is uncertain. So we think that the gamma emission occurs after the creation of a shock region in the jet. And therefore, if we see flaring at radio and gamma ray bands, using the delay between that, we should be able to figure out the emission site. Kind of the goal of what we're trying to do. An original work by Egret showed that it might be in the high energy radio flares might precede the gamma ray. And more recently, well, we're seeing things going the other way, we're seeing things going both ways. It's getting very complicated. Most of the analysis has been done using stacking or samples of large samples of objects. It gets a little complicated. So this particular work that I'm describing here pretty much tries to explain everything using optical depth effect, and gives sort of a lag of 1.2 months in the salt frame. This is sort of what we were hoping to find in this particular object. So Parkside 208 is a river-powered blazer at redshift 1. It's a very strong and variable X-ray source. It's detected by ROSAT, first of all. It's also detected by EGRET in the gamma rays. What else? And yeah, it's a very active source. It has done flaring in pretty much all frequencies we've ever looked at it up. Which is useful because this is sort of what we want in a source. We want to see lots of flaring.
0.999?
0.999, yeah. I haven't seen errors on this, so I just call it redshift 1. So we have radio data from the HCA monitoring and single dish monitoring going back at least to 2003, with some gaps in it, however. We have a very small amount of optical data. We're hoping to improve on that. And we're also hoping to reduce the SWIFT data so that we can use the UV data from that as well. We have X-ray data from SWIFT and, of course, FEMI. So this is the data. I'm going to point this out a little bit, I think. So this is 1.3 to 2.5 gigahertz HCA data, 4.5 to 5.5 gigahertz, 8.6 and a little bit higher, 17 to 24 gigahertz, 33 to 45 gigahertz, and 88 to 96 gigahertz. So that's sort of 3 mil going all the way to centimeter. And you can see that the data sampling is not very even and has a large amount of time gaps in it, which is, you know, always going to be tricky in the sort of monitoring, especially the high frequency data. All the high frequency data from this does not come from a dedicated observing program. It comes from the HCA calibrator database, because we use this source often to as a secondary calibrator for the array. This is the Seduna monitoring. You can see we stopped looking at it for about a year, which annoyed it, and so it gave us a nice big flare when we looked back. And there's a secondary flare just in here, which doesn't show up so well. This is the optical data. This is SWIFT, and here is FEMI. And you can see that FEMI, there's been at least two flares where it's been flaring quite intensively, including right at the moment, which is... All right, so to look at this, we've been doing discrete correlation functions. We haven't done any significance yet, but after this talk by Stefan yesterday, we're definitely going to go and do that. So essentially, yeah, we've been correlating Edison and Krotik, and then fitting with the simple Gaussian. So the error in the fit is then, and so you can see that there is quite a large error in the measurements that we get. Now, for this talk, I'm presenting only the correlations between the radio data. The reason we're doing this is we expect to see, essentially, the lag increase as we change in frequency. So the higher the difference between the two frequencies we're correlating, the longer the lag, which makes sense if you assume essentially opposite depth. So if we plot these all up, this is what we see. So this axis is the lag in days. This is the change in frequency between the two bands that we're correlating. And you can see there does appear to be a trend going in the right direction. The problem with this is if we take a physical approach to this and try to fit it to what we expect to see using the critical radius of where the emission that comes up is within, we would expect a different trend to this. We don't expect this line. And as far as I have stared at this, I can't quite explain why it's not doing that. And so I'd love somebody to tell me why it's doing this instead. Obviously, we also have the OBI monitoring of the source. We have 5 epochs reduced, and of which the last epoch is not of a greater quality as the previous ones. I should warn you about that. And you can see it's a complicated source structure. We have a one-sided jet. It sends quite far out, I believe, at about 20 milliseconds. It does extend quite a lot further than that, but, you know, your components start hitting the noise. And you can see there is some evolution, possibly, but there's not that much evidence for it. You can see the problems that we have with the LBA, because the the resolution essentially changes quite a bit between epochs. Okay, so this is very, very preliminary. I'm putting it in because it's quite interesting. So again, this is just the single dish monitoring here. I'll put that in because it's the highest cadence. You have Fermi here. This is the VLBI core flux. And you can see it essentially follows the main flare. And as the gamma ray data, the gamma ray essentially disappears. We're only getting upper limits of the source. The radio follows, the core flux follows down along with that. And just before this flaring activity up here in the gamma ray, the flux increases again. Again, we only have 5 points here, so Got to be very careful. This is incredibly preliminary modeling of the innermost component of the core, and you can see, or if you believe this, you can see that the innermost component is moving out at a steady rate, or appears to be, until this latest epoch where the innermost component is a lot closer. Does it suggest a new component to the source? I'm not sure. It does seem to coincide with the beginning of flaring in the gamma ray. Yes, but no more than that. If you do take this as a trend, you get a speed of about half the speed of light. So very much not superluminal. Briefly on current and future work. So we are redoing the DCF, particularly between the gamma ray and radio and the X-ray and radio. The hope is that the X-ray, if I go back a little bit, you might be able to see that the X-ray appears to be following the gamma ray fairly closely. So the hope is that if we see a correlation in the radio to the gamma ray, we will see a similar correlation to the X-ray, and therefore be more certain of the correlation that we are seeing. We have several more VLBI epochs already observed. We're waiting for calibration and imaging, and hopefully that will, with proper modeling and components, give more information on what's going on. We're also reducing the SWIFT data with the hope of making SEDs, both in the quiet, quiescent and the flaring state of this object. Again, we'll hopefully link that back to everything else. Thank you very much.
Question for Jane.
I would love to see that. That would be very useful. Right, yes, so the correlations that we've done are between the radio bands of the ATCO. So, essentially, we have lots of different bands we're observing in the ATCO, right? And if we do a correlation between each of the bands, we get different lags between the energies, right? We're not expecting the lag to be the same. And so the main reason we're doing that is we're trying to find out how low you frequency go before you start seeing the wave. Because as the lower you go, the less correlation you get with higher energies. Whereas the millimeter flare seems to coincide with the camera. So does that kind of answer the
question? I think you say the correlation is normalized. If it's normalized, then it shouldn't be greater than one.
Oh, right. No, the correlation, sorry. Yeah, no, it's not normal. So that's
comments or questions? Okay. Well, thanks again.